Welcome, everyone. My name is Mike Verbsky, and you are listening to Limitless. This podcast is brought to you by the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Limitless. My name is Mike. I am your host for Limitless, put on from the Academy for Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. This morning, I am very fortunate to have Amy Bream on the show. She is an adaptive athlete. Amy, actually, your story is a little bit different from some of our other guests that I've had on in that you did not actually have an amputation. Your limb difference was from birth.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm.
So you definitely are going to come in with some different perspectives and some insights for those of us in the audience that are either going through limb loss and or amputation, but also for the clinicians, because very often I work with an adult population. So very often we don't see people that have had congenital limb loss. We usually get our patients after traumas, surgeries, and things like that. So you started from birth with your limb loss. How was that for you in terms of the early stages, growing up and adapting?
Honestly, it felt pretty simple. Obviously, I didn't fully understand everything at that point, but a little even more abnormal, I guess you could say, because I was born with a birth defect called PFFD. So it's a congenital condition that varies greatly from person to person, but every person is missing at least some part, if not the majority of their femur bone. And so usually there's a part of the limb that partially developed, but not fully developed. And so a lot of times, even people with PFFD still end up getting an amputation at some point. So it just so happened where I was and, you know, the timing of everything. When the doctors approached my parents, they were presented with a few different options and they were recommended to actually avoid the amputation because it was a little bit more experimental at the time. And so I've never had any surgery on my limb, which has been good, but also a little bit more tricky with creating like sockets and everything because there's more potential for my limb to be hurt through like some of the typical ways of attaching. But obviously when I'm a kid, I don't know any of that. They just, you know, I'm 1 year old, they strap a prosthesis on you and I just start walking. So I had all the old school, the old school test belts and the mechanical knees that were all about safety. And I preferred a cosmetic cover. And so I always had that. And yeah, I just kind of grew up and there are certain things and as a child that I recognized that I was different. Like when it was time to start swim lessons in second grade, I told my mom I still wanted to swim with my class. So she came in with one of my old prosthetic legs and spoke to my class beforehand just to kind of prep them all. We knew they were going to stare, but to just make them understand a little bit more like what was going to happen. And then I was still their friend, Amy, and nothing had changed and, you know, that kind of thing. Obviously there were moments, but it really didn't start to affect me too much, you know, as a kid more, I guess that started to affect me more starting in middle school.
Sure. I mean, let's face it, middle school kids are tough anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly didn't have a bad, like, at least to my face, I was never really bullied. You know, kids would say callous things, but it was more out of them just not understanding rather than trying to be mean. And I'm really, really thankful that that was my experience. My school was never malicious. Kids were never malicious, again, at least to my face. But of course, I get self-conscious. And like you said, middle school is middle school for everyone. So that's right. When I'm more aware of how I look different than everyone and trying to navigate that. That was a fun time.
Yeah. I have a middle schooler right now and, you know, mm-hmm. trying to find a style, trying to find where they fit in terms of activities or sports or friends or what have you. How did you find adjusting to those changes and trying to find your place?
For sure. So it's funny now, I'm very involved in like athletics, but I was not in middle school or up until I moved to Nashville a few years ago, actually. So as a kid, I'll be honest, like I really struggled with things like gym class and friends. Like I was, you know, really fortunate. Again, my friend group was great. They never really made it a big deal. And I found that I had a really good support system with my family. You know, I would crack jokes about it. And so that kind of put my friends at ease. So sometimes they'd crack jokes about it, but they just never really made my leg a big deal. Of course, at that age, I was struggling with confidence stuff, but I didn't really share that too much at that age. But I would say I just kind of was finding what I liked and I definitely stayed within a certain level of comfort. Like I loved music, so I was staying in music, but I wasn't really trying out for sports and athletics. If I could change one thing, I would probably want to do those things a little bit more and understand that I can. I think if I was talking to someone that age now, I'd let them know, you know, people respond to what you do. So if you want to play sports, then let's figure out how to get you the equipment to do that. And you do it and we'll just figure it out. Like, not to ever assume that something's not possible, because I was always afraid of asking for money for the equipment and things like that. And there's so many ways to get it. And the worst thing that they can say is, hey, that's not possible right now. But the best thing is that you're living the life and doing all of the activities that you want to, no matter how many limbs you have. I think just advocating for yourself a little bit and not making the leg a big deal. Decide what you want to do regardless of the limb thing and then go from there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think now, at least, one of the advantages that kids have and adults also is that the technologies are so much better as we've progressed through. Oh, so there's the adaptations to the prosthetics, whether upper or lower extremity, but the adaptations and the abilities of the prosthetics are so much better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, to be able to participate in sports and activities is, at least from that perspective, a little bit easier. I mean, there's still challenges and potentially acceptance into those activities, but at mm-hmm. least from a technological standpoint, people have more opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are definitely still going to be challenges and there still are challenges, but it is, like you said, it's way better than before. And it's just something, in my opinion, that's worth at least trying, like just not limiting in your mind to what you think is possible, because just because you have an amputation, it doesn't mean life and all of your dreams that you wanted to do are over. Not at all.
Absolutely. I've said this a few times on the different episodes where people have done more with their lives after their limb loss procedures, because it is a new beginning. It's not the end by any means. And there's constantly opportunities to do more, to grow, to change, and to advance yourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you were growing up, I imagine that there was no one else, like in your school or necessarily in your community, that had limb loss. Mm-hmm. But did you have the opportunity to speak with anyone near or far that was going through it, where you could kind of bounce these ideas and these feelings off of, especially as a teenager trying to find your place?
So I personally did not. I actually, again, I cannot stress the importance of that enough, but there's a few reasons. I was also one of the issues of that, because there were opportunities, I believe, even if they were a phone call or something like that. And I was incredibly stubborn. I wanted to blend in as much as possible. And in my mind, talking to or trying to find other amputees was a way to try to stick out, which definitely wasn't the right thought process. And I also, it is getting better, but there was such, like, you know, I don't even know if I understood it was marketing at the time, but anytime that I saw amputees online, there was two arenas. There was like Paralympic athletes that were like completely killing it, and that's awesome, but they seemed so far out of reach. I was like, well, I can't relate to that. And then there was more of the geriatric side. And you're like, well, I'm a 10-year-old girl. I don't fit anywhere. I'm just trying to live life. So I had no interest. That's what I assumed that I would be talking to.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, why would I even try? Because I don't fit in those places, you know? Again, not the correct form of thinking, but that's just the way I understand it. Now it's been so, what I think one of the most positive things about social media is that you can find this community even when you live in a small town like I did and didn't see anyone. I actually didn't talk to another person with my birth defect until I was 24. And that was after I had moved to Nashville. I was getting a new prosthesis made, and it was actually one of the sales reps for the knee that I was getting at the time. And my prosthetist introduced me and we had a phone call. And I remember like almost crying on the phone, like talking to her. You know, it was 24 and it was the first time ever in my entire life that someone was able to describe exactly what was going through my brain when I took a step, more than anyone. Because up until then, again, not that it's a problem, but I had only ever worked with people with two legs trying to describe how to move for me. So there's this constant, like, I understand, you know, but you don't know. Right. And so talking to someone that did know was like so eye-opening. And we became friends, and she lives in Nashville. She's only a few years older than me, and she became this like mentor to me. And I talked to her about dating and subjects like that I was super uncomfortable to talk about with other people, but I was okay with her because she got it. So I cannot stress the importance of that community enough. It literally changed my mindset and my life.
100%. You know, so the population that I generally work with is an older population, but every now and then we do get someone who's in their 30s, and it's that same sort of thing where they can't relate to my 75-year-old patients that have gone through their surgeries because it's a totally different generation. There's different issues and circumstances that people are trying to go through.
Yes.
One of the things, though, that I found very helpful is that with the Amputee Coalition, in that I can find somebody who is in that same, whether age demographic or situation of surgery, where we can pair people up a little bit easier. Because I don't have an endless supply of peer mentors or visitors where I can have them just pop in at any given moment.
Yeah.
So that's been a huge advantage. And it's true. I mean, I've said it many times on different episodes here, but I cannot relate to you on that level. You know, I can have the medical conversations and the physical therapy conversations, and I can analyze the heck out of your gait. But to have somebody who's actually going through it is a totally different level of conversation. And that's a line that I just can't cross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously, like, it's, we need both. Like, that's nothing to say anything against anyone's knowledge or anything. The most helpful thing I would say about, like, being able to have those conversations with someone is just to feel like you're not alone. There is something different in even the language that someone is able to describe when it's just like the little things. Like when I was talking to her, she was like, well, you know how when you take a step and you think your leg's going to give out, but you don't. So you like automatically just do this. It was just something super small like that. And I was like, no one's been able, like no one else has ever done that, you know, like, right. So it was just like those little things that it is amazing.
Yeah, I agree. So as you had mentioned, so you didn't really participate much in sports. Mm-hmm. What was that catalyst for you to kind of add that into your repertoire?
So I moved to Nashville in 2014, and then about a year into it, I decided to just join this boxing gym, or at least try a class with a friend for fun. And for me, it felt somewhat safe. I know people hear boxing gym and they're like, that was the first thing. But it was, you know, it's a cardio boxing gym, so it's more fitness. You're hitting a bag. You're not hitting people or mitts or anything at that point. And it was one of the first workouts that, like, everyone's at their own bag and everyone's like, quite frankly, just not trying to blow a lung. So you're not looking around and you're just doing your own thing. And I was like, this is super fun. And I'm not thinking like I'm actually enjoying working out. So it was the first workout that I enjoyed. And I also didn't feel pressure of just this open gym of people watching me. So for me, that was the first step that I needed to actually be like, I can enjoy this and not feel pressure to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was discomfort when I first went in there and for the first few months thinking of things. I just took one tiny step at a time that made me a little uncomfortable, because I tell people, like, I mean, even Amy probably 3 years ago, 2 years ago, would have never been okay doing the things that I'm doing now that I was then. But I've taken small steps at every stage that has led me to be more comfortable. So now I weightlift. So I was terrified of those things when I first walked into the boxing gym. It was just taking one step at a time and realizing that I was actually okay. The worst case scenario in my mind wasn't actually that bad, that it wasn't happening, period. But even if it did, I would be okay. The benefits of going were outweighing the fears in my head. I didn't start any part, like any part of working out or athletics, with a specific goal in mind, other than I was having fun and I liked who I was becoming in the process. And so I just kept going. And then, you know, it opened up a whole lot of opportunity I didn't really think about at the time.
Sometimes I think that's how the best opportunities come along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was absolutely. Just walking down the street, and next thing I know, somebody asked a question, and I went, yeah, sure, let's give that a shot. And I'm like, and then I come home, and without fail, my wife's like, what did you just agree to? And I'm like, I don't know, but
cool. Yeah, exactly. It's so true, though.
So how did you get from boxing classes to CrossFit?
Yeah, so it was very much that progression. So I boxed there for a few years. I actually now work as operations director at that gym, the gym where I train at. So it's okay. All the same community, but we own several locations. And so I switched location, met some trainers there, and there was a trainer that approached me to learn how to kickbox. That was the next step that I had like made jokes about. I was like, yo, I have one leg, I can't kickbox. But I remember specifically that because he was like, well, you're going to be bad at it at first. You've just never done it before. So just stay with me. And it was one of those like eye-opening, like I've always said this was impossible. And then when I've tried new things and I felt awkward, like that was me in gym class. But I wonder in gym class if I had actually stuck with it and like put away my fear and actually tried, that I wouldn't have felt stupid, and I would have actually been a lot better at certain things because I was okay with being bad at it until I wasn't.
Right, right.
So it just kind of changed my mindset just enough that I was willing to try other things. So once I, you know, stuck with it, learned how to kick, I was like, well, I've also said that I could never weightlift because of my challenges and shifting, and I was scared of like hurting myself or just not having correct form. So I started weightlifting a little bit, and then really, I started working out. I was weightlifting a little bit. I didn't really like it at first. Again, I was really bad at it. I was brand new. That was 2019. I like didn't even know what any of the lifts meant. You want to talk about brand new? Like someone was like, let's bench press. I was like, what is that? Like I knew nothing. And then I worked out with two of my bosses. It was kind of like COVID 2020 time. And so we weren't allowed to work out in groups. And so those were the two people that I worked out with. And they are two males. And it, for me, that was positive because it took away my ability to compare what I could do with other girls. So I was so far not in their realm. It was like, well, I might as well try because I have nothing to compare it to. Right. And so they just would put weight on a bar and tell me, do it. And I had no concept of what was actually like strong or not strong for a girl. So I would just do it because they was like, you can do this, pick it up. So that, you know, got me a little bit more comfortable. And then eventually in 2021, that's when CrossFit created an adaptive athlete division. And I had an adaptive athlete, or I should say competitive adaptive athlete division for the actual CrossFit games. And an athlete on Instagram reached out to me about it. And I had never done CrossFit. Super brand new. I was like, I don't know what this is, but I decided to try it out and it went well for me. So again, but it was like a constant progression. It was like in 2019, when I picked up a barbell, I would have laughed at you if you had said I would have be doing literally half of what I'm doing now. I'd be like, get out of here. It was just being willing to be a little more uncomfortable with every year.
Have you found that you needed to use any different technique or adaptations to an exercise because of the prosthesis, or
yes,
did it all sort of just kind of flow?
A little bit of both, I would say, because one of my biggest fears with weightlifting was afraid, again, of form and afraid of being maybe judged a little bit by people who didn't understand, be like, well, why are you doing it that way? Like, that's terrible form, and needing to adapt. So it was a lot of me figuring it out of how I was learning that I could adapt as safely as I could, what I was comfortable with, and that it was okay to look different. And it didn't mean that I was wrong. It just means that was how my body is meant to move, if that makes sense. And so, you know, there are certain movements that obviously like I will change up or do differently. Or for instance, for squatting for me, my residual limb is so short. It's really difficult for me to actually use a prosthesis. I'm getting better at it. It's something that I'm working on, but it's so short and I use suction to attach my prosthesis that as soon as I start to sweat, when I'm coming up out of a squat, 95% of the time my suction breaks. And when I'm under a heavy load, that's scarier to me to rely on my prosthesis and for it to give out rather than just not use it. So I'm in the process personally of trying to figure out how to kind of meet that middle ground and use it the best possible way. So for me, like using things like squatting to a box and adapting to make it as safely and as comfortable as possible has been a journey in figuring out how to adapt, but also understanding like it's not like a cop out to use a box. This is the adaptation that my body needs to do this well. There's also movements now that I do better and adapt better than I did when I started 2 years ago. So it's a constant thing. And that's also something I love about social media. Yes, you get people that maybe don't know what they're doing, but you can find out pretty quickly when someone knows what they're doing in a sport, you know, specific space, and finding other adaptive athletes. You know, everyone's different and unique. And that's interesting to find out too, in their like leg setup and their socket setup and all of that. But to find other athletes who also adapt like me was just an encouragement, because I was like, oh, like, so what I'm doing does make sense because they're also naturally doing the same thing.
And I imagine that similar to the boxing when you started, you've definitely found a community within the CrossFit. I've heard that from a number of my friends that do CrossFit, that it's a community.
It is. And you're constantly learning from people. And I'm a little bit unique in that I don't actually train at a CrossFit gym. I still train at the boxing gym that I work at. My coach comes from a CrossFit space and we just train together at the boxing gym. But it is like, you can find that community online and competitions. Like, it's pretty unique. There's definitely a support system there for sure.
That's great. And again, that's what we're talking about, right? Community and support systems and moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Within the competitive division for you with CrossFit, is there a breakdown? So above knee versus mm-hmm. below knee, unilateral versus bilateral, or is it more at this point one sort of division in the competition?
So right now it's one division. So I do several competitions throughout the year. My personal favorite competition to do as far as actual competing is called WIAWAD. They have a lot more adaptive divisions and they're independently owned. The people that train and program, some of them are adaptive themselves and they're great people and they're always open to learning. And so those divisions do break it down. Now there's obviously when you break it down that much, there's only like adaptive athletics is still growing. So, you know, you run into limitations, I'll be honest, of not having a ton of people in your division. There's not a whole lot of AKs that are competing, at least publicly. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like just learning to tell people about it and get more people involved and tell them this is possible. CrossFit, the games are obviously the largest competition of the year and they do not break it down right now. It's just one. So I've competed for 2 years. And so far, I've been the only AK across all lower extremity divisions, men and women. And I'll be honest, that's been a great opportunity. And it's also been really frustrating at times because a lot of this part right now, while it grows, is educating people about the differences of, you know, what they're asking my body to do versus maybe different people in my division and just making it as level of a playing field as possible, even with all the same competitors. And so it's been something that has had frustrations, but also I see growth and improvement as we move forward. And with anything new, in my opinion, there's really no way to make it better other than to do it while it's messy until it's better. You know?
I do actually. As I say, I'm the one that walks down the street and somebody says, you should try this. And I go, yeah, sure. And then I figure out later what I just figured out to agree to.
Yeah.
And very often, yes, it's even like we were saying, with new exercises, you know, when you got started with boxing or kickboxing. And sometimes it's messy and it's sloppy looking at first until you kind of figure out how your body needs to move, how it needs to adjust in order to make that move clean and purposeful.
Absolutely. Exactly.
You had mentioned in the beginning, as far as with your prosthetic and because of the residual limb, kind of mm-hmm. how they had to adapt that prosthetic for you, mm-hmm. especially as you grew. But as you've become more competitive, have there been any other issues or adaptations to your prosthesis that had to be accounted
for? I would say, like, honestly, the socket for me is always a challenge. I definitely had, like, this past competition that I had a lot of, showed me a lot of frustrations because, again, like I don't have a clean cut amputation. So there is part of, you know, what would have been the leg there. So I can't, you know, vacuum in the same way. Like I use suction, but I can't also vacuum because that pool starts to like put too much pressure on the limb. And also the fact that my residual limb is like really short. So the majority of it where I could actually put pressure on it and like push is probably about like 4 to 5 inches maybe below my hip. And so the rest of it is more like what would have been like a leg or foot, but I can't really use it much for leverage, if that makes sense. And so like coming up out of a squat, I can't really put pressure on that part because there's not enough there. And so things like, for instance, things like running and sweating is a really big challenge because anytime there's sweat, my entire limb isn't suctioned. Only the top part of the limb is suctioned because of the shape of it. The bottom part of it is in this hard inner liner or inner socket, I should say. And so that part is not suctioned. So there's only like, I'd say about 6 inches of skin that's suctioned. So when I sweat, if those 6 inches break, the leg wants to fall off. And so there's just a lot of like little pieces like that, that if one thing goes wrong, the whole leg is kind of compromised in the competition. And so I had several moments of competing this year that happened. So I think there are ways to improve it, but just kind of brainstorming a little bit with myself and prosthetist and my coach to figure out the best way to go about it.
Have you been able to have your coaches speak with your prosthetist to kind of help with those situations, or is there like a disconnect, if you will, between what the competitive side of the coaching wants to accomplish versus what the prosthetist is able to do with the
prosthetic. That's a great question. I have not had them speak directly, but I think that's just been an opportunity thing. I think both would be very open and willing to do it. I know my coach has expressed that he would like to, and they're both very open to it. Sometimes people are so at the mercy of location. My prosthetist is actually very close to my gym. It's only about 15 minutes away. So we've done collaborations in the gym before, just with other amputees in boxing. So I would love to have like a one-on-one meet where the three of us or however many people it is to just sit down and kind of me be actually at the gym and moving and show both parties what the issues are and brainstorm that. We haven't done that yet, but if it is ever possible time-wise, I think it would be really beneficial.
One of the things that you say we talk about here in New York and Long Island in particular is there are so many prosthetists that it's kind of tough sometimes to find that perfect match between the prosthetist and the individual. And one of the things we always try to do also, aside from obviously the technical skill of our prosthetists, is that personality. You know, finding the right prosthetist to be able to communicate and advocate for their patients. Have you had any issues over your lifetime, really, in terms of having difficult conversations with your prosthetists in terms of what you're looking for out of your leg, but also in terms of the goals you're trying to achieve? And how have you been able to overcome those?
Yeah. So I actually had the same prosthetist all through childhood. So I've only had three total, which is like, I guess pretty unusual considering I'm 30 and I've had it since I was one. But my prosthetist growing up was great, super knowledgeable. I would say I was a very, very stubborn child. So
catching on to a theme here, Amy.
Yeah, very stubborn. So I had like bad walking habits. I said no to physical therapy. Like my mother, especially, bless her, she tried to like put me in support groups because we talk about it now. And I'll be like, oh man, this would have been helpful. And she's like, Amy, I tried that for years and you refused. And I was like, all right, sounds about right. I think with that, I got into certain habits of like walking systems and I went through different types of legs we would try. When I was old enough and strong enough to use a microprocessor knee in high school, you know, that's when I was fitted with that. And at the time it was actually kind of newer technology that they were coming out with. But I think I always accepted what was given to me and assumed that anything else was just not possible. And then when I moved to Nashville, I was like, well, you know, I had a conversation with an amputee. I had to find a new doctor and she was like, hey, like, you need to advocate for yourself. See what else is out there. It's not that my prosthetist growing up was bad in any means at all. It was just, she was like, hey, you need to own like what you want to do. And I always say that like prosthetists can advocate for you. That's important. That relationship is incredibly important, but they are never going to care about your goals as much as you do. So if that's what you're waiting for, you're going to keep waiting because they have so many patients. Like, let's be realistic. If you have goals and opportunity and things that you want, in my opinion, 100%, the patient needs to own it and ask for support and get support that you need. But the ideas and, you know, those things a lot of times do realistically need to come from the patient. And maybe some people would disagree, but that's been my experience. What I would say, like when I moved here, I found a prosthetist and at first we completely changed my setup. And it's not that they were not good at what they did, but I had a pretty poor experience with them, to be honest. And it wasn't a skill level thing, but it was one about like just patient experience when I was there. I felt very uncomfortable. I was dreading appointments. And I found there were some things that they would ask me to try that I was open to, even if I didn't want to, I was willing to do it. But then after a few weeks of trying it, if I said it wasn't working, they weren't necessarily listening to my why and assuming that it was coming from a place of, well, she doesn't know kind of thing. And I was like, well, no, I know my body. I've had a prosthesis at that point for 26 years. Like I know a pretty good idea of what will work. And so I felt like I kept just hitting a wall with it. And every time that I went, it was like this huge dreaded thing. And so I had someone recommend another prosthetist office in Nashville. And it was one of those things where I didn't realize, to be perfectly frank, how poor my experience was until I went to the second office, which is my prosthetist now. And it was such a night and day experience that I was like, oh, this is what it should be. They listened to me. They heard my goals. They suggested things that I didn't know about that I didn't, you know, think about and presented opportunity for me and just made me feel comfortable and heard. And it was like such a different experience. And again, it wasn't me like, I'm just going to sit back and put everything on them to just figure out for me, because it was a give and take between both of us. But I felt like I was being heard, which is half the battle. And they also never pressured me to put me in a specific system or knee or foot. They would give suggestions, but let me try other things. And I think that's a huge indicator when you're going to try a different prosthetist. If you're constantly being pushed into one specific system, it's a little bit of figuring out as the patient, like, is this because they think this is the best one for me, or they are really the most familiar with the system and they're not willing to try out other equipment that might work better for me. That's a really big indicator for me of like, this might not be the best fit, or this is someone good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it comes down to, for all of the advances in the technology has to meet the needs of the individual. In looking on your website and getting ready for today, your mantra is live by example.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean for you?
Yeah, I think that the best way to share, I'm a huge believer that I should never ask someone else to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. And again, for me, like, I started an Instagram account, geez, probably like 6 years ago now, 7 years ago maybe, where I started sharing my story. And I took it as like, well, if I'm going to tell people my story and then try to have any kind of platform of encouragement and tell them to do something, I better be willing to do it myself first, because who am I to ask someone to do something that I wouldn't do?
I agree.
And so that, I think, is what has, you know, I don't want to assume, but I think that's what's resonated with people when I share, and it's made me grow so, so much. Like, when I was first approached by the Adaptive Athlete about CrossFit, I was talking to my friends who were kind of with me when I first started my Instagram account. This is, again, like 4 or 5 years into it at this point. And I remember saying specifically, like, this sounds maybe fun, but like, I'm so afraid of looking stupid and of not like looking like a fool and not knowing what I'm doing because I'm so new. And this is like a competitive platform. And my friend said, your entire Instagram account is based on not caring what people think and doing it anyway, living by example. So this is your chance to live out what you say. And so in a really cool way, having that mantra and then publicly saying that on Instagram, whether or not I always enjoy it, it's accountability for me. And it's made all of these opportunities come about, because I've constantly had to think, if I would ask someone else to do this, then I should be willing to do it too.
Absolutely. One of the other things I saw on your site was that you're going to be starting like a daily workout program that'll be posted up there. What's coming soon? What's up next for you?
Yeah. So this workout program, well, we're calling it Live by Example. It's something that my coach and I are collaborating on. And I would say, honestly, it's like maybe 50% about working out, but really it's about mindset. Like, I didn't start anything with the thought of like, I want to lose 10 pounds or I want to be ready for summer or whatever. And if you have those goals, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But for me, it was like, I just want to take one step that makes me a little uncomfortable and stay consistent with it and see what happens. And no matter how my goals have shifted or whatever, I've learned that consistency, no matter what the goal, will win over absolutely everything. And so this workout program is about that. Some of the, obviously, like, their movements, one, we call it Live by Example because they're all workouts that we've done ourselves and that we do in our training. I also recognize that some people who don't do CrossFit or who are newer to working out, if they would do this, I think it's still a great opportunity for them, but there's going to be a learning curve because there's new movements to learn and skills and frustration that comes with that. But the whole thing is about starting something, doing something consistently every single day, even when you're uncomfortable and you're frustrated, and to just see where it leads, because it's more than about working out. I'm a firm believer that the attitude that you take into a workout will carry into other parts of your life, which is why I take working out so seriously. What do you do when people aren't watching you work out? How many reps are you doing when no one knows what it is? You know, so anyway, so that's kind of, in my opinion, what the program really is about. Yes, there's workouts to learn and to get physically fit, which also as an amputee is so important for balance and for protecting your body and taking good care of it. So that's going to come with the mindset and the intentionality of living and believing that you can do really hard things. And we're just going to see where it goes.
Oh, that's awesome. And I think it's true that, you know, everyone has their own goals. Everyone has their own definition of what that marathon is for them or mm-hmm. climbing that mountain. You know, some patients come in and they're like, my goal is to be able to walk that 150 feet to walk my daughter down the aisle. Or mm-hmm. some people do come in and they say, I'm going to run that marathon. I'm going to go for it. So I think having a workout program that focuses on mental mindset and how to face any of those challenges to overcome those obstacles and to meet those goals is really the key behind everything.
I'm excited. And we'll have like an adaptive and a non-adaptive version. Of course, when I say adaptive, it will be focused on my specific lower extremity cues. And I don't like see a lot of programs that offer those things. You kind of have to do a little bit of research into it. So I'm excited.
Definitely. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So we really want to be open to like anyone who's looking to do it, but people are probably going to go into it with different goals of like, am I doing this as a training program or am I doing this as a mindset or whatever? And my hope is that will be more beneficial in like an overall sense to anyone that joins it. Physical, mental, you know.
So. Total package right there.
Total package. That's quite the hefty request of people. Yeah. So we'll see how this, but I'm really excited about it.
Yeah,
so.
Everyone's kind of looking for that one-stop shopping.
Yeah, right? Same.
Yeah, no, me too. I get it. What would your take-home message be, whether it's for the person who's going through their journey or if it's for that clinician who's trying to figure out how to make and help their patients make their goals? What would your take-home message be for that person?
This is going to sound kind of weird. No one, like, don't let yourself be intimidated and shut down because no one really knows. Like, the older I get, the more I realize the majority of this world, unless you're in a very specific, very specialized field, everyone fakes it till they make it. And even in the specialized field, you're going to fake it till you make it in different areas of your life. And I mean that as an encouragement of like, everyone is in the same boat. We all go through the same emotions. We all go through the same fears and insecurities. And once we realize that, we can kind of take ego and pride, like throw that out because everyone deals with it. So who cares? And let's just figure it out. There's always a way to figure it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If like you're an adaptive athlete or if you're with it, so who cares? And let's just figure it out. There's always a way to figure it out.
Absolutely.
Think for like, you're probably not going to know very much until you keep figuring it out. And a brand new amputee figuring out how to walk, like you are not alone in feeling that way. And I promise you that it will get better as long as you stay consistent. If you're a clinician that feels overwhelmed by not knowing how to best serve your patients, there are other clinicians that feel that way and more. And like, that's okay because you have to start somewhere. So I don't know if that makes sense. I would just say like, never let your fear or maybe lack of experience shut you down because that's in a way an exciting place to start because there's so much to learn and just be open to learning.
I agree. That's a great message. I think that's the first time someone's put that so succinctly.
Good. There we go. Thank you.
So I want to take this opportunity now to thank you, Amy, so much for coming on Limitless. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. I know I'm long-winded, so thank you for listening to me.
For everyone out there who's been listening to our podcast and listening to our episodes, thank you so much for listening to this one. We hope to see and hear you again and hear us again as we bring you more exciting episodes and guests right here on Limitless.